All right. Well, hopefully you guys can hear me. Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, and I'll be the host for the presentation this morning. Today is Sunday, April 13th, 2025. The share ID numbers for Friday, let me give you those. Friday, April 11th, the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting. That number is 22,337. That's 22337. For the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, 22,338. 22338. This morning, A Vision for You presents Learning About Relapse from the Steps. So our speaker is going to share about the necessity of the implementation of the steps through her personal experience and insights. So looking forward to that. You know, there's perhaps an underlying divinity and sacredness with this spiritual program of action, but this is so much more than the ability to eat like normal men and women, which
you keep going
is
in and out
thing.
In the sound.
I'm coming in and out, is that right? Are other folks getting that as well?
Larry, that was just somebody that is unmuted, I believe.
Nope, we're hearing
fine.
Oh, okay.
I thought, Larry.
Okay, good. Thanks so much, you guys. I thought I was coming in and out.
No.
So, you know, as I was saying, there's so much more than the ability to eat like normal men and women, although this spiritual program of action offers that promise. There's this kind of dazzling spiritual radiance that transcends the challenges in our lives that's offered. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous describes having a spiritual awakening as a very significant change in a person's consciousness. It enables them to perform actions and believe things that they could not believe before. And finding really a new sense of purpose in life. It's a transformative experience that brings forth a new way of living. And while the big book does not necessarily have a single definitive quote that defines a spiritual awakening, it does emphasize that it's a gradual, often ongoing process of transformation and connection with something larger than oneself. We're building a relationship to power. So there's a shift in perspective, and it leads to more open and accepting view of not only ourselves, but the world and the people within the world. Now, that said, we're continually reminded of the potential for setbacks, right, and the importance for staying vigilant in recovery. And it emphasizes the need to address underlying issues like our resentments and our fears and all those things, all those disturbances. And, you know, some will intimate that relapse happens when we become disconnected from our higher power, when we perhaps stop working the 12 steps. But irrespective, it's crucial for us to recognize that we create disturbances inside us when we behave unethically, at least I do. And ripples of unease and anxiety flow both inside and outside us. And unethical types of behavior, such as greed and manipulation and control of others, untruthfulness, those are self-centered things, and they're based on furthering our own interests over other people. So even though this isn't about morals or philosophy necessarily, if I want to sustain a sustainable ongoing spiritual awakening, that means I have to move beyond self-centeredness if I'm going to avoid relapse. Otherwise, it's not if I'm going to eat again. It's really more a matter of when. So joining us this morning to share on various aspects of her recovery and relapse is Elizabeth D. She is a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts, and she's dedicated to our 12-step way of life. She's committed to carrying a message of hope to our fellowship. So it's with great gratitude and appreciation that we welcome Elizabeth D. to the line this morning. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Larry. Can you hear me?
I can. You're coming through loud and clear.
Terrific. Thanks so much. Larry, for your service this morning and for everyone who makes these meetings possible. I am Elizabeth Droletas, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater, and I was so grateful to be asked to give this special edition now, because last Thursday, April 10th, was not only my birthday, I turned 67, it actually is also the anniversary of my current abstinence. I became entirely abstinent again on April 10th, 2023. I got a new sponsor, I started a new step study, and when I reached step five, which was early for me, I achieved food neutrality again and had a spiritual awakening, which I'll talk about a little bit later, as a result of working the steps. Today, so grateful, by the grace of my higher power, I choose to call my higher power God. I'm maintaining a healthy body weight of just under about 140. I'm also beginning my 37th year in OA, which tells you that I've had at least one relapse, and I've actually had many in my OA journey. And as Larry said, the title of this talk is Learning About Relapse from the Steps. I was really moved to cover this topic because I know a lot of us struggle in OA with relapses, and I have a lot of experience with this. And in my 37 years in OA, I've had periods of back-to-back abstinence, years in fact, but I've also had periods where I've had on-again, off-again relapse. And I remember my most recent relapse 2.5 years ago, pretty horrible. I remember waking up in the middle of the night, stomach distended. I had gastrointestinal distress that made my system a wreck. I was gaining weight. I was laying there not wanting to eat my trigger foods, wanting desperately to get off this relapse merry-go-round, but still hearing my binge calling from the freezer, knowing that I would start the workday with a raging food hangover. It was horrible, and I lay there panic-stricken, thinking, why can't I get this? Like some of us have read in the big book, I was pounding on the bar, saying, how did this happen again? Wondering if, I'm going to go to page 58, I'm going to go through the big book a little at a time in my story. In the big book, in How It Works, it says, those who do not recover are people who can or will not completely give themselves to the simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living that demands rigorous honesty. So here I am, 25 years in the program, and I'm feeling like this in the middle of the night yet again.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but the sound is cutting in and out. It's very staticky, and it wasn't before.
Thanks for that.
Yes,
I don't know
true.
If there's anything we can do. Yeah.
Let me do this. I'm gonna take my hearing aids off and go to speaker. So hold on, please. Okay.
Okay. Sure. Take your time. You're with family here, so we're
okay.
We're easy. So everyone, just kind of
okay.
Feel for your patience here. How about that? We'll resume just a minute as we deal with some technical challenges.
Hi, Larry.
Look at that. Yeah, perfect.
I know. Here I am. How is it? Is it less staticky now?
It's not staticky at all. No.
Oh, good. Perfect. Okay.
Yeah, perfect. You keep
Forget about
Great.
The hearing aids. Okay, so like I said, I was really wondering if it was I was one of those constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves people. After all these years, I was still relapsing, and I was panic stricken. Thank you, God, I'm not there today. And I'd like to start by saying I have three hopes for my talk this morning. And the first is to reach that person out there saying to themselves, what's wrong with me, in the same way I did. I'm hoping I can remove some of the shame from the equation, because shame is a lot of the reason why I couldn't get out of relapses, but also out of a relapse cycle. I've come to understand that there's no shame in this problem that I have. Compulsive overeating and my relapse history are both illnesses, just the way cancer and diabetes are illnesses that their sufferers don't choose. I'm not a worthless person because I relapse. I'm an ill person who needs medicine. And I found, happily to say, that I found that in a way. My second hope is that I reach even one newcomer with the following message. Here's my message. Please know that my having spent almost 40 years of my life in OA and have a lot of relapses doesn't mean that the program doesn't work. The program does work when I work it, entirely abstinent with a step guide at my side, shining the light. You know, I don't want to say this
again,
too.
It's doing it again, Elizabeth. Maybe if you hang up and call back in or something, it might help. I think
okay.
It's the line.
It's the line.
Yeah, is it? Let's do this first. Elizabeth, it's Larry. If everyone else could just let me take care of it, I appreciate lots of helpers. That's for sure. I could use all the help I can get, but I got it.
I'm gonna move to another room too.
Yeah. Are you on a computer line?
I am. No. I have Wi-Fi in my house. And
okay.
I'm just gonna move
okay.
to another.
Because
if this helps.
Like right now, it's sounding reasonably good, but yeah, we're just
okay.
running into a little bit of patchy here. So
I'm
try
so
to
sorry
continue
about this,
or...
guys.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
And you know, the other thing I'm going to do, I'm going to unplug Bluetooth from my cell phone.
That might help if you're on the actual phone itself. I know that's sometimes
hold
helpful
on,
for me. Sure.
Okay. Talk amongst yourselves. Hold on.
Hey, I can do a song in advance, but then you when you get back on, you won't be speaking to anybody because they're all going to drop off. But
okay, let me turn off Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm hoping that's going to help. And if it doesn't, I can we can. I can come back.
Yeah, we'll improvise. Okay, sounds good right now.
Does it? Okay, good. Now I got to go back to the other room and get my big book. Patience. You guys are wonderful.
If you got recovery, you got patience.
Thank God I did an outline for this. All right. So, okay. I was talking about my second hope. And I was saying that I'm really hoping that everyone understands that people who have relapse, and a lot of us have a lot of it, it's not because the program doesn't work.
Okay, we're still getting, I'm sorry to interrupt you, we're still getting, staticky lines there. So I'm not sure. Is there any way to call into the line, or is it only through? Are you going through like Skype or WhatsApp?
I'm using my telephone, my iPhone, and I called the vision line. I'm talking on speaker. Maybe I should come off speaker. Let me try that.
Okay, let's give that a try. If not, maybe you try to call back in. Sometimes we.
I'm going to try that. Now, see how that is. Is there any improvement? Is there any improvement, Larry, or is it still static?
No, it's still a little bit, it's still a bit staticky. So
why don't I call back in?
Yeah. Let's try that.
Okay.
And I'll keep everyone occupied here until you come back in. And
yeah, I hope people don't, we don't leave. Well, we might lose a lot of people, but that's okay.
No.
I'll call you right back.
Okay,
thanks, Larry.
Good.
You're a master. Bye.
Yeah. So Elizabeth, we're having some technical difficulties, but we're gonna try our best to resolve it. Otherwise, you guys get me on relapse, which, hey, you never know. I can speak on that one for sure. But yeah, Elizabeth is she's just having a little bit of challenges with the line being staticky. We want to hear everything she has to say. So she's calling back in, and momentarily we'll be, hey, good opportunity to, if you're not signed up for the convention, the Vision for You study of the Big Book together, November 7th through the 9th, good opportunity to do that. I'd hate for you to get shut out in terms of hotel and that type of thing if you're having to come in. And that happens, and it's just such a great thing when you can be in the same hotel. I can't tell you what the status is right now, but I know it's filling up as we expected. We haven't done one since 2019, and so we're expecting a great convention, and we're looking forward to that. So if you get a chance, make sure to get signed up for that.
Hi, Larry.
There you are. Hey, let's give it a go. Let's give it a go. Let's see how we do. I'll chime in if we have any issues.
If you still have issues, let me know.
Okay.
So, you know, I wanted to also say that, you know, I've had relapses over the past 37 years, maybe it's because of what I've learned in my relapses. Despite those relapses, I've enjoyed my life very much in those 37 years, and I've come to the point at age 67 really feeling pretty blessed and excited about where I am today and about what's ahead, even knowing that, I know aging brings uncertainties and challenges that are pretty grave sometimes. Today, I'm recovered and I'm not cured. I get to keep this happy, recovered life so long as I maintain my connection to God as I understand God and do the work that keeps me spiritually fit on a daily basis. But don't get me wrong. Yes, I've enjoyed my life, but relapse into uncontrolled eating, I'm telling you, where I binge up 60 pounds in a matter of weeks, really sucks, if you'll excuse the expression. It's incredibly painful. My relapses never get easier to bear. They only get harder. So the third thing I'm asking my higher power for in this talk, if it be his will, is that I reach one person who's still fairly new in OA and experiencing relapse now. If you're new in OA, fairly new, and you can't seem to get this, I just want to read something from the 12 and 12, which is another piece of our literature. It's in step one on page 23. The Bill's talking about the fact that in the early part of AA, it was dealing mostly with low bottom alcoholics at that time. And he said, then he goes on to say, it is with tremendous satisfaction to record that in the following years this changed. Alcoholics who still had their health, their families, their jobs, and even two cars in the garage began to recognize their alcoholism. As this trend grew, they were joined by young people who were scarcely more than potential alcoholics. They were spared that last 10 or 15 years of literal hell the rest of us had gone through. Since step one requires an admission that our lives had become unmanageable, how could people such as these take the step? It was obviously necessary to raise the bottom the rest of us had hit to the point where it would hit them. By going back in our own drinking histories, we could show that years before we realized it, we were out of control, that our drinking even then was no mere habit, that it was indeed the beginning of a fatal progression. If you're new and experiencing relapse, you don't have to spend almost 40 years experiencing relapse the way I did. If you're like me, if you are a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety, you can surrender to the reality that I've surrendered to, which is that I'm powerless over my trigger foods, ingredients, and behaviors. And today I have contented abstinence, which I hope will be over a long period of time. Today I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that I'm powerless and over these things, and that my life is unmanageable. And that word "and" is super important. Was put there by the founders intentionally. For background, Larry, are we? Larry?
You're coming through great. Yeah, you're coming through great right now.
Okay, great. So I wanted to just, for background, share a little of my story as briefly as I can. And for those of you who've heard it, my apologies. Maybe you can use this time to putter around the kitchen. Anyway, I put this in four chapters. Chapter one I call My First 10 Years. This isn't the first third I'm in OA. I came in at age 29 at the advice of a really kind and knowledgeable psychiatrist who was treating me for a major depression that was triggered by a breakup of my first adult relationship. And she suggested I attend OA meetings because I told her I had a little weight problem. I was binging. And she said, I asked why. And she said, because it's the best free therapy you'll ever get. And she said, I've learned the limits of control. That last part went completely over my head. But I still started going to meetings and hearing my story over and over again. However, from age 30 to 40 in OA during those 10 years, I kind of used the a la carte method of OA. I had internalized the motto that we heard in the rooms at that time, which was, quote, take what you want, leave the rest. Well, I left most of it, never got a sponsor. I actually gained 100 pounds, proving that old saying that denial is not just a river in Egypt. I was hearing my story, but I'm not like you people. I just have a little weight problem. During the time, I tried a few diet clubs, but they never lasted for long, and the weight just kept coming back. Which brings me to chapter two in my story, very importantly, and this is the one I call Finding 90-Day OA. So long about the age of 40, I started dating again, and despite my body dysmorphia, which is a big feature of my illness, I desperately wanted to have a family of my own. And another male rejection sent me back into the soup, so to speak, and I stumbled, desperate to lose weight, into a faction of the program called 90-Day OA. In 90-Day OA, let me explain, you're asked to refrain from sharing at meetings until you have at least 3 months of back-to-back abstinence. These are folks who want to hear about, they want to hear about how to live in abstinence from people who are living in abstinence. I got a sponsor who put me on a no flour, no sugar, weighed and measured food plan, and I lost 80 pounds in 9 months. I have never been able to lose weight like that in my entire life. And thank God, I also had a sponsor who was wise and recovered, and back then we weren't using the word recovered in OA, but now I know she was, and she insisted that I go to step meetings. And I started going to step meetings and did one after another. I kept the weight off. My career was going great guns, and my relationships with my family and friends, I was being more authentically myself. I was dating again. And I was, from a very young age, always a religious person. But during that time, those years of being in 90-Day OA, the promises came true for me, and I began to have a personal relationship with the God of my understanding. And as it says in the big book, God became the single most important thing in my life. I was feeling so strong that in my work that I felt I could go on to have my heart's desire, which was to be a parent. So chapter three, I call becoming a parent. Basically, I couldn't control when and if Mr. Wright came along, but I could become a parent through adoption. So I flew to Kazakhstan to adopt my infant daughter. When Emily was about three, I had my first relapse. That was over one weekend, and it scared the hell out of me. At that point, I went right back to OA 90. And that's important to note. I went back to OA 90. And here's the problem. For the next 7 years, I relapsed on and off. The longest relapse was almost 2 years. I was raising my daughter, working a demanding job, lots of ups and downs. I had a relationship with a man, and I lost a job, had breast cancer treatments. Both my parents passed away within 9 months of each other, worst year of my life. And I was going to 90-day OA regularly, every week, three times a week, going to these meetings. I couldn't figure out why, over those 7 years, I couldn't get long-term abstinence again. Then, at the end of a particularly terrible relapse, this was in 2015, where I gained about 70 pounds in a matter of a couple of months. Someone told me about these new phone meetings where the focus was on the big book. So you know where I'm going with this. Chapter 4, I call Finding Vision for You. I knew from the first meeting that I'd struck the mother lode here with these meetings. These people were talking about working the steps, quote, in the fast lane in order to get, quote, recovered. Can I actually recover from this? I thought, wow, it's right there in the forward to the book, 100 men and women who got recovered. You know, I had tried those multi-addiction big book step studies, but I couldn't get through the 2 to 3 year written four-step without relapsing. I got a vision sponsor, my first, and for the first time, I read with her the first 164 pages of the big book from start to finish. In AWOLs, while doing 90-day OA, we used OA literature, the 12 and 12, and occasionally picked up the big book. In that step study, when I got to step 9, was only halfway through my amends. So this was when I started working vision. I got to step 9 using the big book entirely. I was amazed at the spiritual awakening I experienced. And I understood what was missing during those 7 years when I was raising my small child. I wasn't working the steps. I was just abstinent. But unfortunately, that awakening was short-lived, which I'll talk about later. Within a year, I relapsed again. And in 2017, thank you, God, another vision sponsor stepped up, suggested I seek a deeper relationship with my higher power, and she took me through the steps, again, very much in the fast lane. This time, I had what I know today to be a kind of a mini spiritual experience, whereas before, my spiritual transformations in OA were of what they call in the rooms the educational variety. And in my most recent step study, the teacher called a spiritual waking something like a dimmer switch. As one works the steps and changes their behaviors through the tools recommended in the chapter into action, slowly the lights go on in the room and you find yourself, your reactions to life, changing for the better. And the dimmer switch starts to go up and the lights go a little higher, a little lighter, more in the room. For those of you who are new to Big Book, please check out page 567. That's 567, where there's an explanation of the difference between a spiritual experience and a spiritual awakening. Very important. So the step work gave me 4 wonderful years of sponsoring in the program in a whole new way outside of my 90-day formula, which I can talk about later if we have time. And a life that brought me so many new gifts. That 4 years were wonderful. My daughter was in the golden years before adolescence when she was little and still liked being with me. And I found myself being the kind of parent I'd always hoped to be. I was working 10, 11, and 12 during that time, without exception. I met my future husband, a wonderful man. And I have to say the quality of our courtship and the lovely development of our relationship into a deep and sustained bond reinforced my program and my religious practice and the step work that I was doing. And here's the irony, which I love to tell people. My husband is an atheist, which I think is God's little joke to me. But it's really true, and anybody who's interested in hearing more about that, I'd be happy to talk offline. Then came Emily's adolescence. So this is like Bill's story, you know, it just, oh my gosh. Then came Emily's adolescence and the pandemic and the start of another relapse cycle for me. She approached high school graduation and we started to have a lot of problems communicating. So from 2021 to 2023, I relapsed twice. That was, I got to tell you, those 2 years were like a white knuckle expressway when I had abstinence for several months and then I fell off again. But now the stakes were even higher. The pain of eating was even more acute. When I was eating, I wanted nothing to do with my fiance. I had no interest in intimacy at all. I just wanted to be in my condo and him in his house eating. It was like page 21 in the big book, the Jekyll and Hyde situation. I was hiding, sneaking, not wanting to be intimate. It was horrible. These were both short-lived relapses. And I didn't gain much weight, but they were worse than the others. But as I said, they never get better. I was now abusing laxatives, you know, and I was always someone who said, I'll never be bulimic. But all of a sudden, here I was abusing laxatives. The thing is, here's what I know. My disease progresses, even when I'm abstinent. And if I'm not working the steps, the disease is progressing. So I'd like to, that's my story. I'd like to share a few passages from the big book. And Larry, I'm going to try something and see if I can go to speaker. And you tell me if this still works, because it would be easier for me to, are you still hearing me okay?
Yeah, you're coming through really clear right now.
Oh, good. And
it.
How about,
sure.
Okay, how about now? Still working? Okay.
Yep, still working.
All
right. You got it.
Okay, great. So let me share a few passages from the big book that have informed my path as I've come to understand my history of relapse. And, you know, I'm powerless over relapse, just like I am compulsive overeating. So it's important for me to note that I can't really understand what the why out with it. I just have to be really powerless. That's baseline for me. You know, I could relapse tomorrow, and I have to recognize that. I have a daily reprieve. Unless I'm doing 10, 11, and 12 in my life every day, you know, after about 2 or 3 days of not doing step 10, not doing my nightly reviews in a couple of days, I'm starting to feel restless, irritable, and discontented again. And the food is not far behind. I've learned that from bitter, bitter experience. But I want to go to the story of one of our favorites, Jim. Jim is on, this is on page 35 of the big. So you know, this is the guy who has the lucrative automobile agency. He's a good salesman. He seems great, intelligent all the way. And then he picks up drinking, and in a few years he becomes so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came to contact with us. We told him what we knew of alcoholism and the answer we found. Let me stop there. The answer they found, of course, was steps 2 and 3. Sobriety and steps 2 and 3, a higher power. And then I'll go on. He made a beginning. His family began to work as a salesman for the business he had lost when he was drinking. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. To his consternation, he found himself drunk half a dozen times in rapid succession. On each of these occasions, we worked with him, reviewing carefully what had happened. Yeah, I can really relate to this. During those 7 years, I'll tell you what happened to me. When I had my daughter at home, those 7 years, I only went to 90-day OA. My sponsor at the time said, look, you're still trying to adjust to being a single mother. Get your feet under you. You can go back to working the steps later. Well, that was, for me, just enough rope for me to hang myself with. Because in 90-day OA, we would hear every meeting, work every tool every day, food plan, phone calls, writing, meetings. You'd hear, abstinence is the single most important thing in my life today, rather than what I know in my heart today, which is the consciousness of the presence of God in my life. Today is the single most important thing in my life. You know, my daughter and I attended church, and we got a lot of great support there, and I thought I was working a spiritual program, but I wasn't. And here's what I would do after I had a relapse during those 7 years. Since I'd always gained weight, a bunch of weight, because my relapses didn't last long, but I would gain so much weight, I would be miserable. I'd surrender. I'd find a sponsor. But, of course, I had to interview that sponsor to make sure she'd let me work a weight loss food plan where I could take the excess weight off. And when I got closer to my goal, that sponsor would add more food in. I wanted that kind of sponsor. I'd get abstinent, feel better, get clearer, start losing weight, and then after 90 days, I could share again. Woohoo! Aren't I a star? You know, Ms. OA. Then in 6 months, I'd be allowed, according to the rules of 90-day OA, to sponsor again. And God help me, I was not the kind of sponsor that I am today. And I'm trying to make a living amends by being the kind of sponsor that is outlined in the big book. What I was really doing was using OA 90 as a diet with group support. I wasn't eating flour and sugar, and I was using my scale, but I was abusing sugar-free gum, lozenges, coffee, diet soda, and I was practicing certain ways of preparing my food that I know today to be trigger behaviors. I was also living in what we say in the step studies as the bedevilments. And I'd love to go to that page, but you can find the bedevilments. Well, I'll just offline, I can tell you where they are. So I want to read, I want to go down, you know, because I'm running out of time. I want to go someplace where, okay. All right. So, yeah, I want to share a paragraph that really was a breakthrough for me in my during my step work and my problems with relapse in 90-day OA. So on page 25, I was working with the sponsor from in 2017. She was the one who took me through the steps really quickly. She had me read. We were in the chapter, There is a Solution. And it's at the bottom of the page 25. It says, if you are as seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle of the road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other to accept spiritual help. This we did because we honestly wanted to and were willing to make the effort. So I finished reading that to her, as she had asked, and then she said, Elizabeth, so tell me, what is your intolerable situation? And I said, I didn't know how to answer that question. I said, well, I think my intolerable situation is being in the food, because it's misery in the food, and I gain weight, et cetera, et cetera. And she said, well, that's interesting. That's not my intolerable situation. I said, what? She said, my intolerable situation is being abstinent without a higher power. Oh, my God, the scales fell off my eyes, and I realized what that in a moment. I had been, in 90-day OA, I had been blotting out the consciousness of my intolerable situation by abusing gum, sugar-free lozenges, men, sex, overspending, etc. Still going to meetings and calling myself abstinent, but I had an unmanageable life. And I was blotting out the consciousness of that unmanageable life with all these other food behaviors and things that I was abusing. Rather than put that stuff down and pick up the spiritual tools in the steps and seek a new experience of my higher power, and reopen the channel, I was ignoring and keeping God out. You know, so I want to go tell a story about the conditions in, another story about the conditions in my head that led to relapse. In Jim's story, he's angry and resentful, and he has to work for a dealership he used to own. He's in a really negative headspace for sure. But I've also relapsed during a period when everything is going great, just like Fred, our other friend Fred, in More About Alcoholism. And that's on page 40. I'm going to go to page 40 and try to summarize this as best I can. In fact, you know, everything was going great. He was on a business trip. You know, he was sober. He was on a business trip. He had successful business. He was feeling great. And I'll go on and read from the book. Neither did I have any pressing problems or worries. My business came off well. I was pleased and knew my partners would be too. It was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud in the sky. I went to my hotel and leisurely dressed for dinner. As I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. That was all, nothing more. He ordered a cocktail and thus started another binge. Well, this happened to me. In 2016, after I'd worked the steps with my first vision sponsor, I decided to take my daughter, who was just turning 13, back to Kazakhstan to explore her heritage for a couple of weeks, during which believe it or not, we met members of her biological family. It was an incredible, life-changing trip for both of us, filled with joy and discovery, and it's something we'll never forget. The food was really challenging in Kazakhstan, and I couldn't get fresh fruit easily, but they had a dazzling array of dried fruits, and that's when the bargaining began. My mind was saying, oh, it'll be fine. I started to negotiate about bringing something back into my food plan, dried fruits, that was clearly a trigger in my past. And I didn't recognize that that was the twist in my mind. Oh, when I start negotiating, and I use that today, when I start negotiating over a food or a food behavior and bargaining about it, I know I'm in trouble and this is something I have to stay away at. Unfortunately, I ate the dried fruit and my abstinence was a white-knuckle expressway for the next 2 months, and then I headed into a Thanksgiving, that year thinking, oh, just one day I'll eat what my siblings are eating, and then I'll go right back to my abstinence, and I proceeded to put on 70 pounds in 3 months. So you could say I ate the dried fruit, that's why I relapsed. But in OA literature, it says the disease is reactivated before the bite is taken. Going back to 2015, before the trip to Kaz, when I was working with my first vision sponsor, we got to step 9, and as I said, I had a spiritual awakening. I was living in the promises. I was free of some very serious resentments around the loss of a job that had me stuck in relapse. And I was reopening, I had reopened the channel to a daily relationship with the God of my understanding. But at that point, my sponsor said to me when I was experiencing all that, so now you have a refreshed relationship with your higher power, Elizabeth. What are you going to do to maintain it? She pointed me to steps 10, 11, and 12, which are in page 84 to 88 in the chapter Into Action. My sponsor at the time shared with me how she did her 10 step and her 11th step, her nightly review. She used note cards. She jotted down the difficulties, the amends she needed to make, the morning prayer and meditation practice. And she encouraged me to do the same, but to build my own kind of scaffolding for my spiritual life around these particular things to do every day. I went out and bought some note cards, and that was it. I was unsure of myself as a sponsor. How could I possibly be as effective as that sponsor had been? The only way I knew how to sponsor is to take my sponsee's food commitment every day and tell them to get to an AWOL or a big book step study. I had no idea how to sponsor in the steps. So I let 10, 11, and 12 drop. And then I went to Kazakhstan in 2016 and picked up the dried fruit, and I gained 70 pounds. So, Larry, you know, I have a few more things I want to share about how I work my program today for the next 10 minutes or so. So I do step 1 every day. I cannot fool myself about what's in the food plan, in my food plan. In the doctor's opinion, there are three to five places where the doctor states in different language that the substance must be down in order for the steps to be worked effectively. If I'm still eating or practicing food behaviors, or even, you know, food behaviors that are triggering the craving, sometimes quickly and sometimes over a matter of months, I lose touch with my higher power. I start to think that I don't need to do these things, that I'm different. The channel closes and I'm vulnerable to the second aspect of my disorder, which is the disease thinking that tells me it'll be different this time. One of my sponsors used to say to me, she said, my recovery life is like a drain in a sink. I have to keep, and the water is my higher power. I have to keep. The way I do that to keep my higher power flowing through my life is by doing 10, 11, and 12 and unclogging the drain. And I really like that analogy. So fast forward, in 2021 and 2023, yep, I had another relapse. And this is where I want to talk about steps 10 and 11 and 12. So as my daughter Emily and I entered and endured the pandemic, we were stuck in the house together. She was miserable. Here she was, 16, 17, 18, stuck in the house with her mother, doing remote work. She couldn't hang with her friends. I got to tell you, it's not easy under good conditions to be an adolescent. And it was just, she was a pandemic kid. It was horrible. And I, for my part, was learning how to be a new kind of parent. It was great having meals with her every day. Woohoo. But the point is, I needed to learn the limits of control. And the words of that first psychiatrist rang true. You need to learn the limits of control. Well, where do I learn that? I learned that from steps 11 and 12, 10 and 11 and 12. During the emotional turmoil that Emily and I were in, I let the emotions around my relationship with my daughter build, and I neglected to work those very important review steps. They sometimes call them the maintenance steps, but for me, they really are growth steps. They help me respond to life. When I had the last time I worked the steps in 2024, the teacher that I worked with used an analogy called the dimmer switch. I did have a spiritual experience at one point in my story, and it was sudden and immediate. But most of my spiritual experience have been of the educational variety, where they're slow over time as I change as a result of working the steps, and as my life gets better, and as God enters my life, and I have a personal relationship with that God, it's kind of like a dimmer switch. The switch goes a little bit higher every day, and it's like an awakening into the light. I really like that that metaphor. During this time, I felt prey to the bedevilments on page 52. That's where you can find them. And I also started living in pages 60 and 63, which is another place. If you're struggling, or if you're not struggling, I highly recommend going back to those pages. I just have to refresh myself. How am I doing? You know, where am I in my spiritual life if I'm disturbed? And I use those pages regularly on a daily basis. So, you know, at this point in my life, during 2021 and 23, when I had those two relapses, the dimmer switch was going down and down and down. Most importantly, and I'm going to go back to the big book, at the bottom of 87, this is where into action, where we're giving tools for avoiding relapse. It says, and this is part of my daily awakening practice, in the morning, as it says, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. And boy, oh boy, it really does work, I have to say. I'm so grateful for steps 10 and 11. And step 12 is super important to me too. And I'm going to end by talking a little bit about working with others. I am a very different kind of sponsor today as a result of working the program and getting recovered using the big book and being abstinent. I no longer insist that my sponsors follow my food plan. What I do insist that they do is get a nutritionist, get the pamphlet from OA about that outlines different plans of eating and follows it. I ask that they commit their food daily, just as I do, via text, and I become their accountability partner and someone that they can talk to when they start bargaining in their head. See, when I start bargaining in my head, the first person I talk to is my sponsor. And together we decide, is this a food or behavior that needs to come out? And I had a sponsor who once said to me, she said, boy, you really are, because I said to her at one point, I said, you know, I'm finding these frozen bananas are giving me problems. And, you know, it's healthy. And she said, well, you know, maybe you need to take them out. And I didn't want to. And I was bargaining about it. I love them. And I was going out of my way to get the right kind of banana at the right ripeness and putting them in there so they'd be sweet enough, blah, blah, blah. And she said to me, you know, looks like you're chasing the effect that food is giving you. It's right in the big book. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect that it brings. I was chasing an effect. And she said to me, you know, when I find a food like that, you know, and at the time I thought to myself, oh, please, I don't want to take yet another thing out of my food plan. Am I going to end up with just drinking water? And she said to me, well, you know, no, that's not going to be like that. She said, I find that when I have to give up a food because it's triggering me, I look forward to that because I know it's going to, at the other side of it, I'm going to be brought closer to my higher power. And every single time that's happened for me, when I am sponsoring people, I am not in the outcomes business here. And when I start to feel, and this is another kind of canary in the coal mine for me, because I've been here before. When I start to feel frustrated that they aren't doing things that I'm asking them to do because it worked for me, and I keep getting really frustrated, that is a signal to me in my own mind that I'm on shaky ground with myself, not with them. They're not on shaky ground. They're just compulsive overeaters who need help. I'm on shaky ground because now I'm thinking I'm in the outcomes business. This is why, for me, working with others is so crucial because I help them with their food plan, and I can't ask them to think about giving up a food if I'm not being rigorously honest about my own food plan. Every time I sponsor someone, it makes me think about my own food plan. That's a gift. And also, I have to constantly remind myself to stay in God's will for myself here and not try to play their higher power. I'm not in the outcomes business. I don't get them abstinent. I don't keep them abstinent. All I am is, like my most recent teacher taught me, I'm just a person who hands a lantern in a dark place. I'm not the light. I just carry a lantern. So with that, apologize for the faulty cell signal in my home because I think that might have been the problem, and hope that that was helpful to somebody, and I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Elizabeth. We so appreciate your kindness and generosity this morning, and no, it was fine. It gave us time to practice some patience here, which was good. So we're going to transition to question and answer period. Think about in a moment. We'll get to that. If you have a question for Elizabeth D., you're going to press star 1. But before we get to that, let me give you first the share ID number for the presentation this morning. That number is 22,340. That's 22340 for the presentation. And also, please hang around at the end of the recorded hour because we're going to ask Elizabeth to leave her contact information if you want to reach her offline here as well. So with that being the case, let's quickly move over to Q&A. If you have a question, star 1, give me your first name and last initial. Who's got a question for Elizabeth?
Good morning, Toby W.
Okay, Toby, I got you. Who else?
Leah A.
Gloria B.
I got Leah, I believe, and Gloria.
Aaliyah A.
Aaliyah. Okay, Aaliyah and Gloria. Who else? Anybody else?
Jane B.
Becca R.
I got Jane and I got Becca. Was that Zigrid?
Sherry A.
Sherry, okay. Else?
Jody.
Star one to Jody. Hi, Jody. Okay, that's a good start. Let's see where we get here. We got, let me tell you who I heard. I heard Toby, Aaliyah, Gloria, Jane, excuse me, Becca, Sherry, and Jody. So let's start with a question from Toby. Good morning, Toby.
Good morning, Larry, and good morning, Elizabeth. As you know, you're telling my story because we shared our stories over the years. The question I have for you is, 10th step. What can you walk me through it?
Yes, I would so love to walk you through it, Toby. I would so because it. I need to walk through it myself. Page. Let's see. Interaction. It's so good to hear your voice, Toby. Hold on. It says this brings us to step 10. Which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with another person immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. This is one of my favorite paragraphs in the big book because, you know, it sort of encapsulates all the steps in one paragraph. Step 10, we continue to take personal inventory. So this, why do we do this? We do this because I do this. I want to say we. I do this because I work step one every day in my life, which means I'm powerless over my trigger foods and behaviors, and my life is unmanageable. So not only am I powerless, my life is also unmanageable. That "and" was put in for a reason by the founders. Because the founders really felt, and it's in the big book, that our way of life here would have usefulness for non-addicts, that finding a spiritual way of living had answers for everyone. So I just happen to be an addict, but I am an addict, and I have to be very clear that my food plan is weighed and measured, and no flour, no sugar, 3 meals a day, nothing in between. And I have to work this step. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So this means that even before I finish making my 9th step amends, I'm already starting with this new way of life because I've entered the world of the spirit. I've had a new experience of my higher power. And so my next function is to grow, in other words, enlarge my spiritual life. And understand, this is not an overnight matter. I can't expect, and, you know, that I love because it sort of goes to steps 6 and 7. You know, like, God, make me ready. It's not overnight. I may have to live with a character defect for a while, but I am open to change. I'm humbly asking him to remove it in his time. It says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear that comes straight from the 4th step. And when these crop up, doesn't say if, it says when these crop up, we ask God at once, so immediately. That's how I work the 10th step today, Toby. When, to the best of my ability, and trust me, I don't do this all the time. I'm still impulsive. I still forget to pause sometime and ask God for help. But I try, and this is what I do. When I am really in turmoil, I pause at once, and I discuss them with someone immediately, the first chance I get. Usually it's with my sponsor as soon as I can. And we talk it through. Where was I selfish? What's my part in this? What is my part in the disturbance that is that I had a part in creating? Because that's what I have learned. This is an ego deflating program. This is not a weight loss program exclusively. This is an ego deflating program. And I have learned that my disturbances, I have a part in. So where was I selfish, dishonest, resentful, or fearful? Usually it's around fear. And then we pick it apart, we unpack it together, and God helps me. I have a really, really very trusting relationship with a sponsor, and I pray a lot. And then I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help immediately. There's step 12. So thanks for asking about this, Toby, because I really love it. I just want to say one last thing about step 10. I used to be confused about, okay, the nightly review in step 11, I'm asking a lot of these same questions. Do I do step 10 as part of my nightly review or no? This is a spot check inventory. That's what this is for me. It's immediate. It's in the moment. And so I do this during the day. So I have to go into the bathroom and get on my knees and pray. Then that's what I do. And then I try to call someone, and that's the fifth step. And I practice. This really works for me. And I always feel a huge sense of relief and a closeness to my higher power when I do an effective 10th step. And now that I'm married, boy, yeah, they come in very handy. So I'll pass with that.
Okay. Thanks so much for the question, Toby. Okay, next up with the question is Aaliyah, followed by Gloria. Aaliyah, good morning to you.
Good morning, Aaliyah here, compulsive overeater in Montreal, Canada. Thank you so much, Larry, for your service. And Elizabeth, wow, that was amazing. Thank you. I could relate on so many levels. And would love to chat with you after. So my question is twofold. So the first one is, I'm interested about what you shared with your daughter, what you went through. I'm going through something similar in terms of emotional turmoil and how you went through this. You know, you mentioned limits of control. So I'd like to hear a bit more about that and how you handled the situation and what helped you the most. And the teenager too as well. And the second one is just to share maybe about your morning routine a little bit more. Thank you.
Okay. I can boil this down pretty quickly. The reason why I relapsed in 2020 during that time was because I stopped doing my morning routine. And the emotional turmoil kept building and building and building. And then something happened between my daughter and me. I'm not going to talk about it specifically because there isn't time and it wouldn't be appropriate. But something happened in our communication that was really, I really made a huge mistake. She didn't know about it, but I did. And that was my impulsive. If I had been working the 11th step, if I had been praying and meditating during that time when my daughter and I were going through that turmoil, if I had been doing 10 steps every day and reaching out to people, I don't believe this thing would have happened. And it took me, I got to tell you, it took me 6-8 months and another step study to kind of come to an understanding of why I had done what I did, which was all about control. I said what I said, did what I did, and why I let that happen. And there's been a resolution, and as a result of that mistake, and this comes down to the amazing thing about step 6 and 7, I found out that it was a character defect. You know, my controlling was a character defect, and but for some reason, I can't know, God meant for me to practice that character defect because I needed to learn a lesson. And as a result of working the steps hard after that thing that I did, I have become a better parent. Like, I've become the kind of parent that I was when she was little, which I really feel good about, because now I'm a guide on the side. I'm not a sage on the stage. You know what? She has a life of her own, and she has a higher power of her own, and it's not me. And we have a really tremendous relationship today. So my my 11-step practice is I pray and meditate every morning. You know, sometimes a long time, sometimes a short time. I write. I meditate in order to be mindful of my thinking. And so first I pray, and I pray, you know, I calm down my body using some techniques that are, you know, you can find online to calm my body. Then I say the prayers that are in the big book on awakening prayers. I say those prayers, and I quiet my brain, and then I am just quiet. And during that time, things will bubble up, and I have my pen ready, and I write them down because, you know, they could very well be my will, the God's will for me. And what I am trying to do every day is align my will with God's will. You know, I have a will, and if it goes toward selfishness, et cetera, entirely, then my life becomes unmanageable. But if I align my will as best as I can to God's will for me, and the first thing I know is that God doesn't want me to eat compulsively. And God wants me to be, you know, pretty disciplined in the way I eat on a daily basis. And then the other things that come up are, how can I be of service to someone today? Oh, you forgot to call. Go ahead and call them. And my life just flows so much better. And when it doesn't, and I'm disturbed, I do a step 10. And then the big, really monumental growth comes when I sponsor people. Because, you know, it's a little like parenting. You know, sponsoring is like, you know, they're an adult, just like my daughter. I can't dictate what she does. All I can do is just be a lantern in a dark place and ask questions and listen and listen and listen and just try to help this person find their higher power. Somebody said, try to put their hand in their own higher power. So anyway, greetings from Boston. I had my honeymoon in Montreal. It's the most beautiful place. And, let's get in touch.
Thank you, Aaliyah. Okay, Gloria, it's your turn, followed by Jane. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for your service. I'm Gloria. I'm also a reader in Missouri. And thank you, Elizabeth. Oh, my God, you told my story. The very first question I think you asked was, or you asked yourself, is am I constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself? And that's one I just recently asked myself because I did have a relapse, and also I started in 90-day OA, got abstinent there, and now I think I struggle with that. And I have a vision guide, and I love her to death. She is great. But I still struggle, I think, in my head with the OA 90 structure and some of the difference with vision structure and sponsoring and ways. Did you have a struggle switching over? I mean, and if you did, how did you deal with that? How do you come to terms with the differences, I guess, and the I guess that's my question. Thank you.
I love that question, and I'm so glad you asked that question, because yes, it has been a process for me to do. It's really around, I guess the key for me is working with a sponsor, and I believe my sponsors all along the way have been, you know, given to me by my higher power at moments of absolute bottoming out desperation. It's like the gift of desperation. I get the gift of desperation. I'm overweight. And I'm in that scary place in the middle of the night. And, you know, it can take me a while to get there. But when I get there, I just say, I just sort of use my intuition somehow. God has always put the right person in my path, and they certainly have this time. And guess what? The person God put in my path was a 90-day OA. And thank God for that, because there are times when I leave a restaurant and I say to myself, oh, my God, I'm sure I ate too much. I had too much fat. And I didn't bring my scale because it's a business meeting, and I don't bring my scale when I have a business meeting because I don't want that to distract. And believe me, she challenged me on that a lot. But I, you know, really feel that I can, or if I'm in someone's home and I don't know them, and for some reason it's really going to be a distraction for me to talk about it for whatever reason. So, and everybody does it differently. But for me, I weigh and measure my food when I'm in my own home. And when I'm with someone that I trust who knows my story and et cetera, and when I'm at work, because everybody knows I do that, in the kitchen, I weigh and measure, et cetera. But under those circumstances, sometimes I'll leave a restaurant and I'll go, oh my God, did I have a break of abstinence? Because, you know, again, it's sort of like this, there's a sort of PTSD that I have from 90 Day OA. And believe me, I'm so grateful for 90 Day OA because it got me abstinent the first time, like entirely abstinent the first time. And I had a spiritual awakening in 90 Day OA that I'm so grateful for, which made it possible for me to be strong enough to adopt my, so a lot of reasons why I love 90 Day OA and still do, and I'm grateful. But I still have a little, you know, because I'm a perfectionist, I can get into a little PTSD, like, oh my God, did I talk to, the next time I talk to my sponsor, it's absolutely the first thing I have to talk about. I say, this is what happened. And she listens. And the first time I did this with her, I was really afraid I was afraid she's going to drop me. Because that's what you did, you know, three strikes, you're out in 90 Day OA, you know. That's how I sponsor people. If you had three breaks, done with you. I don't sponsor that way anymore. Thank you, God. You know, like, I'm not in charge of getting them abstinent or keeping them abstinent, you know. And this love and tolerance, like it says in the 10th step, tolerance is my code today. It's a very different way of sponsoring. I'm still learning how to do it, but the main thing I think that's important to me to make the transition is to have a loving sponsor who's helped me understand, well, you know, it's okay. You know, what's going on in your life that, and let's talk it through. And it's not, that's not a break, you know, your abstinence, you know. Anyway, that's the best I can do on that answer. I'd love to talk offline more about this when you get my number, seriously, because I think it's a really important topic. There are a lot of people who come to Vision, I think, from Gray Sheet, from 90 Day OA, from How, where there was a lot of rigidity in it, in the way they work the program. And, you know, for me, I found that way of doing it can lead to a shame-based and a fear-based way of working the program, which then just keeps me in my relapse or keeps me in a relapse cycle. And like I say, you know, 90 Day OA really worked for me until it stopped working for me. My disease had progressed and I needed something different. And, you know, interestingly, Vision the Vision way of sponsoring, which was, you know, in the fast lane, worked for me too for a long time until it stopped working for me. And the last time I worked the steps with this 90-day OA sponsor that I talked to you about in 2024, that step study took me a year, and it was fantastic. It was great, and I, you know, it's what I needed. And whatever you need, when you need it, if you're open and honest and you take it to your higher power and you talk to people, you can find your way. That's what I shouldn't be talking like that, like you can find your way. But that's been my experience.
Thanks for the question. Yeah, thanks for the question, Gloria. We'll see if we can get through the others. Next up is Jane, followed by Becca. Jane, good morning.
Hi, this is Jane B. from Massachusetts. Elizabeth, I am smiling and smiling and smiling all through the variety of things that you offer is just so, so helpful. I've been OA, in OA a long time, 2.5 years. And I do have a question about relapse. This past February and March, I binged like one night on ice cream only because my husband has it in the house. And then I would be recovery 7 days, then I would binge one night, then recovery, that one like that for February and March. So I've been abstinent 14 days here in April. And I love what you said about that when I have that thought come to me, it's all over, but I wasn't even pausing or questioning it or even negotiating it, like you said. So my sponsor would say...
Jane, can I ask you to formulate a question, if you could, in the interest of time?
Sure, sure. What's the deep dive when I have that twist of mind and cannot... just the twist of mind, what is the real problem? My mother's been sick. My husband's ill. I just had a knee replacement. So there's a lot of emotions going on in my life, too. So
yeah, I get it. And, boy, I love this question. Because, you know, one of the trigger, trigger things for me is coffee. I can't drink coffee. I abuse it. And it always... Oh. Black coffee always leads to lattes for me. It's a gateway drug. It's just the way it is. It's not true for everybody, but it is for me. And I will drink from one end of the day to the other. So I can't drink it. Every time there was a period of time when I was relapsing over and over again when coffee was the way I relapsed, and I would get all the weight off, and I would feel better and clearer. I would have a period of time, and then I would think, oh, I've arrived. It's kind of like it's in the bit, like Buffett, I had arrived. Then the complacency sets in, and I'm thinking, well, I'm thin, I'm okay. I've been abstinent for X amount of days. Okay, well, maybe it's okay now. I can have a cup of coffee. Now, I did this a number of times, and then I have a cup of coffee, and then I'm off and running into a relapse. This happened like 2 or 3 or 4 times. I don't remember. But around the third or fourth time, I'm now conscious of the fact that I'm hearing in my mind the mental twist. I'm hearing it. I'm saying, well, I can just go to Starbucks and get one cup of black coffee. That's it. Nothing else. And then I won't do the sugar and all the stuff. Promise. I'm not going to do it. And then I'd be off and running. And I remember thinking, it's kind of like there's a line in Jim's story where he says, you know, he was thinking about putting whiskey in his milk, right? And he puts whiskey in his, he said, I didn't think I was being any too smart. When I had this thought, and I had the same, and I knew his story, and I thought, I don't think this is a very smart thought. I could not help myself. Now, here's what I understand today. I understand today that whatever period of abstinence before that thought, something was off in it. It was something in my food plan was off, was triggering me, or there was something in my spiritual life that was off. Usually, it was something in my food plan. That's where, and I got to tell you, I always had to go to rock bottom, get another sponsor, and then, you know, I had to give up coffee. I had to say to myself, I can't do it. Like there's a certain point where I think that rigorous honesty, what really helped me is absolute rigorous honesty with a sponsor about what is keeping the disease cycle alive in my food plan, you know, and that's what has happened. I don't have any control over that mental twist. Once it's in my mind, because the conditions of relapse have already begun, I can't stop it. It's a runaway train. It's gone. So once I got abstinent again, I had to look back and say, okay, what? All right, got to take that out. No, I got to take that out. Or sun-dried tomatoes were another thing. You know, God put it, you got to take those out. Dried fruits got to come out. There's certain things that had to come out. I didn't like it necessarily, but again, once I took those things out, the effect was amazing to me. I worked the steps. I got a spiritual awakening, and I had the promises come true for me. So, you know, there's nothing better than, number one, having the gift of desperation. And I hate to say it, I just had to go to the rock bottom, you know, and, you know, maybe you're not ready. I don't know. I can't diagnose you, but I had to be at rock bottom. I had to have the right, you know, a God-given sponsor, somebody that I had an intuition was going to help me, and I had to ask for help with my food plan to review again, what are my red light, yellow light, and green light foods, ingredients, and behaviors. And then I had to talk things through. And I have to tell you, sometimes I would identify, you know, most of the yellow light foods would be actually red light foods, but there were some that weren't. So it's not cookie cutter like it was in 90 Day OA. It's a process. So I hope that helps.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Jane. Okay, Sherry and Jody, I don't know that we'll get to you today, but we are going to get the contact information from Elizabeth. But let's go with, at least for now, a question from Becca. Becca, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks so much for the meeting. I got so much out of it. My question is just in regards to your relapses. Do you think that having had the experience of some level of recovery, even though it might not look what it does today, do you think that I'm always trying to find a silver lining for someone who's
yeah.
relapsing
yeah.
sometimes?
Yeah, I'm with you. I totally, totally agree. There is a silver lining. Like I said, 37 years in OA, I've had a wonderful life. I've had so much happiness and growth. The growth and the amazing thing, the wonderful things that have come into my life, career, family, growth, my daughter, all the things that have happened because of the my recovery process. And yes, I've struggled with relapse, and, you know, I have relapsed, and I lost a job because of my relapse. I have, you know, there were things in my career, you know, I think I could have gone further in my career if I hadn't had those relapses. But you know what? That's okay. That's not what it's about for me today. What it's about, what, you know, the joy of living comes from my relationships. But I do think, I want to say this one thing, and this is really the bottom line. Just like my, and I've heard this, and this is not original, just like my disease is progressive, my recovery is progressive at the same time. So every time I did a step study, I learned something new. I grew. I went to the next level. Yeah, I would stop doing 10, 11, and 12, and I'd have a relapse because of the emotional buildup, and I'd have horrible, but then I would go back and by the way, the set-aside prayer this last time was so critical to me. God, set aside everything I think I know about myself, my brokenness, and you for an open mind and a new experience of myself, my brokenness, and especially you. that is what I try to take to each of that's what I've tried to take, and I've had a new experience, and that has brought me to a new level of understanding about recovery. And like it says, you know, we will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the light on it. So I think my effectiveness as a sponsor, when I put my ego away and I, you know, I'm God-centered in my sponsoring. When I'm God-centered in my sponsoring, I begin to be grateful for my relapses. And there is the silver lining you're talking about. So that's a great question. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Becca. And unfortunately, we're just going to wrap up here with just enough time to close out. And first, I want to thank you so much, Elizabeth, for your graciousness and also getting through the technical difficulties. It went real smooth after we figured all that out. So much appreciated.
You're welcome.
Yeah, wonderful job.
You know, Larry, I couldn't have gotten through it without your melodious tones and your calmness. It really helped, and I thank you for your service, but also being Larry.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks for the kind words. It makes me feel good. Thanks, Elizabeth. So we're gonna close, and then we're gonna please stick around. We're gonna get Elizabeth's contact information if you care to reach out to her. So let's close from a reading from page 164 in the Big Book in a chapter entitled "A Vision for You." And I'll read that now. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.